Okay, friends, here we are. We have begun the section on electric fire and spirit in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. This is Cosmic Fire Web Commentary, number 14. And we're looking at this amazing chart of the cosmic parabrahm. We might do a little better if we look at it from here. I think so. Because this tends to be, we can get it all on one page. Well, what are we looking at here, really? We've been looking at this for a long time. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. I think it should be Shiva, Vishnu, Brahma. It's not put really accurately, I think. Sat, Chit, and Ananda is correct. First logos, second logos, third logos of the Soto-Logoic Trinity. The unmanifest spirit, matter, and creative wisdom. These are different terms. Existence, bliss, and intelligence. The only one that's really out of order is the Hinduism. It should be Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma. The words cosmic with a K may suggest that we are dealing with this particular chart. This one. Possibly, with all of these being the K cosmic planes. Possibly. But let us see. We have root races, sub-races. These are obviously not laid out properly on planes. They just give us an idea of the different types of septenates which originate on the seven planets of our Earth. You see, they are not laid out on the planes properly. But all of this is as if going on the first of the cosmic planes. The seven planetary chains, and they could be called schemes, but in theosophy we generally, the 49-fold structure is not so much mentioned as a sevenfold structure, and therefore chains rather than schemes, unless chains means schemes. The logos of our own solar system is here found, and there are going to be seven other solar systems. This is a pretty good representation of the idea that our logos is only one of seven major solar systems, and we call it the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And this rises through the cosmic planes. There's no attempt to lay out the requisite number of septenates or the different levels of the different cosmic planes. As a matter of fact, it's rather inaccurate, even when you consider the, you have one, two, three, four, five levels. There should be seven. So there's no attempt to lay out the these different beings on the planes to which they apply. Let's just say that this one has a much more accurate assignment of the different beings to different levels. But I do think that we are dealing with the same chart as chart number 5 is. And the seven spirits before the throne of God are really, well, should they be found on the highest level? Generally, spirits are. They're found on a logoic level. When we come to our own little system, the seven spirits before the throne, well, there are seven intraplanetary spirits who are found in Shambhala, which would be on the logoic plane. But it looks like the prototypes of the seven spirits will be found on the highest level of the cosmic physical plane. We cannot say that there is no part of the planetary logoi that is found on the logoic plane. So if there's a correspondence that our seven spirits, the Ray Lords, are found in Shambhala, then we have to think that the seven major planetary logoi will also have a shambolic part and will be found on the logoic level. Now, of course, the logoic level mentioned here is that of the cosmic logoic level and not the systemic logoic level. And in fact, this is the first cosmic subplane. Well, the chart is not drawn in accuracy. It's just meant to give suggestions. Now, is this a totally cosmic chart? I would say that rather it concerns the one about whom naught may be said. And these seven spirits before the throne are seven great constellational logoi, which have within them seven major stars each. And then I suppose there is a kind of a trinity, which is connected with the three persons of the Trinity, only now we're dealing on cosmic levels instead of on systemic levels. You see, if we deal on systemic levels, the three persons of the Trinity are found here. But we're going to a much higher level, and we're not talking about a solar logos as the head of this hierarchy. Rather, we are talking about, I think what may show itself as a cosmic parabrahm on this map. Because if we deal with the seven cosmic planes, then this term, I always want to keep one of these where it belongs. Oh, I'm too far away. I should have gone over here. Okay, there it is. This parabrahm can be correlated with this parabrahm, I think, because we're dealing with the first cosmic plane. Now, in a way, I think what we're going to see here is that these seven spheres before the throne are actually higher than I said. Each one of them is not just a one about whom naught may be said, which would be found, I think, in these little triangles. 49 ones about whom naught may be said. This is my present interpretation. And here are seven sub-parabrahmic logoi. And I think what we have here is seven sub-parabrahmic logoi. Now, they are largely focused on the seventh level. Largely focused on the second level. So if they are before the throne, the map that we're looking at has them on the cosmic logoic level. If these are the, in a way, cosmic ray lords, then they should be on the cosmic attic plane. So there are some discrepancies between the two maps. At least these look like the three persons of the Trinity, and they are missing, in a way, from this map. There should be, but there is a triangle here, and maybe each one of the points of the triangle represent somehow the three persons of the Trinity. There's the three persons of the Trinity standing before the cosmic parabrahm. Now, what is not shown is that this cosmic parabrahm is only one of seven, and the seven into one, seven into one, seven into one would continue onto the super cosmic planes. So, if I said something different earlier, I'm kind of revising my view. I think these two maps have some similarities. They do deal with cosmic planes, and the lives of the seven spirits before the throne, well, these are generally considered in our solar system planetary logoi. So these sub-parabrahmic logoi in the seven circles are the analog on a much higher level to the planetary logoi considered as spirits before the throne. Now, there's a manifestational level for these seven, but there's probably also a logoic level for them as well. In other words, what's our analogy here? If in a planet, the seven spirits before the throne are found on the highest level because they're members of Shambhala. Now, are they found as part of the inner council chamber? It seems that they are found on the logoic plane and not on the monadic plane. Are our intraplanetary seven spirits before the throne, our ray lords, as they apply to this planet, are found on the logoic plane. So if they are found on the logoic plane, then maybe there has to be an aspect of these seven planetary gods who are seven spirits before the throne, and they too have to have an aspect which is found on the logoic subplane. Now, the only thing that would confound that, if somehow Shambhala was not just considered to be on the logoic plane, but also on the monadic and the atmic and the buddhic plane, and to a certain extent we might be able to see how this is true. But what I want to do is point out here, I think it's in the rays and the initiations, the radiant seven, R-A-D, the rays and initiations, so radiant seven. And here are the constituents of Shambhala. And one thinks from their status that they're not just going to be found on the monadic plane, so that when we analogize to their higher correspondences, their higher correspondences should not be only found on the monadic plane. The Buddhas of activity are part of the council chamber. But then again, you know, everything is divided further into seven. So even if they're found on the logoic plane, these beings who are a member of the council, maybe only Sanat Kumara himself is found on the very highest level, and maybe the Buddhas of activity on a lower sub-subplane. And so with these other beings, they might not all be found on the same sub-subplane of the logoic plane. Right. Subplanes and sub-subplanes may discriminate where they are found. So, few of the lives who form the inner group of the council, see, the council is found on the logoic plane. It's not found on the monadic plane. It wouldn't make sense. It has to direct everything. So here, the supernal three, the esoteric Buddhas, the radiant seven, who are the seven spirits before the throne, the lives embodying the 49 fires, the Buddhas of activity, who are the three lower Kumaras, and certain eternal spirits, they're all found on the logoic plane. Therefore, our analogy must be that there are aspects of the planetary logoi, too, which are found on the logoic plane. If the planetary logoi are the ray lords, who are the seven spirits before the throne of our solar logos. And similarly, when one looks at these seven sub-parabrahmic logoi, there would be aspects of their nature that would have to be found also on the cosmic logoic plane because they would be members of this super-cosmic Shambhala, really, is what it would be. So the analogy asks that they be found on the plane of Adi, whether or not they manifest in seven forms here. They certainly can manifest as seven great forms on the cosmic monadic plane, but there has to be an aspect of their nature which is found on the cosmic logoic as well. So I guess I'm making clear to myself that if the seven planetary logoi are the seven spirits before the throne of the solar logos, an aspect of their nature has to be focused on the cosmic logoic physical plane. If this is the plane of what we call Shambhala. All right. Well, this is going to require some sorting through, and just to compare it with the map over here. The cosmic parabrahm, which is not parabrahman, which is the absolute reality. I mean, we're not even at the galactic level here when we're talking about this. Maybe somehow this map could be extrapolated all the way up you know, beyond the galactic level to the very throne of the universe, perhaps. But it seems that what we have here is a rising through the cosmic planes to seven spirits found in the super cosmic Shambhala. We have probably a solar Shambhala, and we have also a planetary Shambhala. Where would solar Shambhala be found? Well, I'll leave that for the moment and not try to solve that. But this super cosmic Shambhala, involving seven super constellational logoi, or I call them sub-parabrahmic logoi, seems to be found on the very highest level. Now that's if this map is correct. And I think that the Radiant Seven, there are all different categories of Radiant Seven. There's a Radiant Seven who are Raylords. See, it's and really, if you think about it, these whatever goes on here can happen on a solar logoic or a planetary level. When we talk about the Radiant Seven inside a planet, they are representatives of these seven in the solar system. We've got seven major planetary logoi, and every planet, I would say, has its Radiant Seven. So there are going to be 49 Radiant Sevens all throughout the, or 49 Radiant Ones who are members of seven Radiant Sevens for the major planetary logoi. And here we have even our Earth is not a major planet. It's not a sacred planet. And we have our own Radiant Seven who somehow reflect these planetary logoi. Now, if the Radiant Seven are somehow found on the logoic plane in Shambhala, then there has to be a sense in which their prototypes, who are the seven planetary logoi, or the seven Raylords, also have some kind of expression on the logoic plane. But perhaps their most characteristic expression through the human and Deva monads is on the monadic plane. So, going higher, then, here are the, in the sub-parabrahmic logoi, are the correspondences, much, much higher, to the planetary logoi. And they, and this cosmic parabrahm will also have a Radiant Seven before his throne. Will these Radiant Seven, in a way, be a reflection of these seven? See, these seven are the essential ones. They are the seven spirits before the throne. Is there in each one of the cosmic parabrahmanic logoi? There's going to be a Radiant Seven who are reflections of some sort of logoi, who are the Raylords for this cosmic parabrahm. Well, you know, maybe this would be better written out, but if we start low and we say there are Raylords on any particular planet who are the Radiant Seven in Shambhala, and they are reflections of the planetary logoi, then perhaps we can grasp what is happening farther above. You see, the problem here is that what appears to be below really has to be above. Like every cosmic parabrahm will have a Radiant Seven within it, and they will be reflections of the analog to our seven major planetary logoi. It says that the planetary logoi are seven spirits before the throne of a solar logos, okay, and the Radiant Seven are seven spirits before the throne of just a planetary logos. So the Raylords, who are the Seven spheres before the throne are before the throne of the Solar Logos. The radiant seven, who are intraplanetary Raylords, are reflecting the actual Raylords, who are planetary, and they are seven spheres before the throne of a planetary Logos. We've got three orders. Seven spheres before the throne of a planetary Logos, seven spheres before the throne of a Solar Logos. We've probably skipped one somewhere here. There's seven spheres before the throne of a cosmic Logos, and now what we're looking at here, well, we've skipped more than one. We've got seven spheres before the throne of a one about whom not may be said. We've got seven spheres before each one of these thrones, seven spheres before the throne of a sub-parabrahmanic Logos, and we've got seven spheres before the throne of a cosmic parabrahm. And I think what this map is trying to show is very high. It's seven spheres before the throne of a cosmic parabrahm. But somehow the Trinity and the seven spheres are all on the same plane, which is a higher analog to the logoic plane. Well, some ambitious person can map that whole thing out. I've given a number of levels. How many have I given? Just reminding myself. the radiant seven before the planetary Logos. A higher correspondence of the radiant seven before the Solar Logos. And these are the actual Raylords, the planetary Logoi, in their logoic presence, in their presence on the logoic plane. We have the seven spirits before the throne of a Solar Logos. That's three so far. We have seven spirits before the throne of a one about whom naught may be said. We have seven spirits before the throne of a sub-parabrahmanic Logos. And we have seven spirits before the throne of a cosmic parabrahm. So always there are going to be seven kinds of Raylords, as it were, before the throne of the head of the hierarchy. The head of the hierarchy on our planet is our planetary Logos, and we've got Radiant 7 in Shambhala. The head of the hierarchy in our solar system is the Solar Logos, and we've got seven major planetary Logoi who are taking the role of the seven spirits before the throne. The question is their main field of expression on the monadic plane, or do they also have a kind of a presence on the logoic plane? And I guess they do. You know, if a vortex is on a lower plane, how did it get there? Did it just arise within that lower plane, or did the vortex somehow work its way down to that lower plane? That has been my assumption, that it has worked its way down. I know this is intricate. It's more an exercise in teaching us how to think correspondentially. Not that we can necessarily, through these correspondences, come up with anything practical in terms of understanding what these lives are and how they really work, but at least we can understand the layout a bit more, the map. So in this cosmic in this chart of the parabrahm, not parabrahman or brahman, but parabrahm, we have some very high beings, and I'm likening them to sub-parabrahmanic logoi, seven of them standing before a threefold cosmic parabrahm, and these are the analogs within that threefold cosmic parabrahm to the three persons of the Trinity. Only it's not a logoic Trinity, it's not a cosmic logoic Trinity, it's not a super cosmic logoic Trinity, it's even two steps higher than that. It's a Trinity for the cosmic parabrahm. And these seven spirits are not just constellations, nor are they groups of constellations, but they are groups of constellations. In other words, in each one of these triangles, you have seven major constellations. So you have then in a sub-parabrahmanic logos 49, seven groups of such constellations, or 49 constellations. And so each one of these, each circle here is represented by a circle here. And each one of these circles has 49 major constellations in it. And if we follow the analogy, the different persons of the of this particular Trinity, I don't even want to think about what name it would be, has certain of these seven and others which are not sacred and are on the same level, but they're not sacred, just that we have non-sacred planets and sacred planets. These are the analogs here to our sacred planets and their other non-sacreds. So these persons of the Trinity are great beings which include three of three spirits before the throne, both sacred and non-sacred, in their expression. It's the first, second, and third logos, and it's found here on this map. That these three, each one of them includes three of these. And there are more. These are the seven sacred, and they are planets, or planetary raylords, and there are some non-sacred planetary raylords which are included when the big circles start to include three at a time. So all we're doing is analogizing and taking it up farther. What's the important thing to know about this map? That it deals with the same vibratory levels as chart 5. That we're dealing with seven cosmic planes, which are the etheric physical planes of a of what? Of every, well, they are etheric physical supercosmic planes. But they are seven cosmic planes, and at the head of every one of these seven cosmic planes is the expression of what's called a cosmic parabrahm. It's not even a galactic logos. It's nowhere near as big as that. And it is not parabrahman or Brahman, as it's sometimes said, because Brahman is the absolute. Parabrahman is the absolute. But what we have here is a cosmic parabrahm. It just seems to be a term that is chosen for a great being. Before this cosmic parabrahm are seven spirits before the throne, and each one of these spirits contains seven great super constellations. Because each one of the triangles over here these triangles are each super constellations. They, in other words, they're composed of many constellations such as the Great Bear, Orion, Draco, and so forth. So each one of the triangles contains 49, or rather seven major constellations. So then each one of the larger circles contains 49 major constellations and seven super constellations, and it itself might be called super constellations, and they're all before this cosmic parabrahm. So what's important is that this kind of map just continues until we reach the 10th dimension of cosmos. It says cosmos has 10 dimensions. And every system of, let's say, the seven cosmic planes have become just an etheric, physical, supercosmic plane. But if we add six more of those supercosmic planes together, and we have seven of them, then those seven supercosmic planes become just a super, super cosmic etheric plane, and on and on. So we can, I've never taken it all the way, but we can see how far cosmos really goes. It seems that there are arbitrary limits on the dimensionality of cosmos. He says it has 10 dimensions. So we assume that each series of seven subplanes of a certain status or frequency, I don't know if frequency is an applicable term, represent one of these dimensions. The first kind of dimension, I suppose, is in a way our seven systemic subplanes. Well, our seven systemic planes as one cosmic plane. But we learn that it's just an etheric physical plane of a cosmic kind. But add all of those cosmic planes together, and you get an etheric physical plane of a supercosmic kind. Add seven supercosmic planes together, and you get an etheric physical plane of a etheric physical plane of a super, super cosmic setup. How many supers would you have to add by the time you reach the end, and how many planes would there be? It is calculable. The only thing is we don't know whether the setup of seven planes is really somehow subjectively a setup of 10 planes. 10 seems to be a more perfect number. So, you know, is it... So we have to start possibly squaring these numbers. Well, I'm not going to get into the mathematics of it. It would take me a while. I think the principle is what's important. It's not that it's a very high type of mathematics. It just would be, for me at this time, a little bit time-consuming, and I don't want to come up with some ridiculous arbitrary number about how many planes there are in cosmos. It's enough for us to know that there are 10 dimensions, and we have 343 subplanes, subplanes even on our, just on our cosmic physical plane. But if we were to say that there are really 10 divisions of each kind and not just 7, then instead of 7 times 7 times 7, we would have 10 times 10 times 10, we would have 1,000. We would have 1,000 sub-sub-planes on each of our, on our cosmic physical plane, and on each cosmic plane. So that would be like 7,000 sub-sub-planes. And then we'd have to multiply, I better stick to the tens. So we would have 1,000, but then that 1,000 would have to be multiplied by 10. So we'd have 10,000 of the sub-subplane variety on the next higher plane, but then we would be adding more subplanes. So it gets extremely intricate, and one has to just harvest out of all of this the idea that in my father's home, there are many mansions, many dimensions, dimensions which to us are just unthinkable. And then we realize, from the practical point of view, in what a tiny darkened room we actually do live, only aware of just a few dimensions. So when you look at this map, you realize that it is symbolic in a sense. It is not accurately drawn, but it does point to certain types of beings which have been more accurately represented on some of the Tibetans' maps. And that anything that can be said of this map can also be said of much larger maps which would have a similar kind of structure. In other words, these seven spirits before the throne of a cosmic parabrahm suggest that there's going to be seven of these triangles, and they would be seven spirits before the throne of a super cosmic parabrahm, and on and on and on. Although, you know, at my present stage of understanding, a limit would have to be reached in terms of the manifested cosmos, because any time there is a something that you can really name, I call it a specifiability, you know, I know it's an awkward word, but anytime there's a definite specifiability, you're going to be able to think of it as finite, and the universe is a specifiability. When you deal with something that cannot be named, then you can think of it as the truly infinite. But any universe is a kind of singularity. It's a oneness, a one, and it has limits because it's followed by another one and is preceded by another one in sequence according to the secret doctrine. So you can't have one infinitude followed by another infinitude in time. I don't think it's possible, and I think I could try to prove that in any there are no sequential infinitudes. I think Cantor would disagree with me, but let's just say that in any infinitude, time is endless, and so there's an impossibility of sequence. If it takes endless time to work out the process of an infinitude, it can't be preceded and it can't be followed. So since universes can be both preceded and followed, at least according to the secret doctrine, they are finitudes. They are specifiabilities. Maybe finitude is a better word. They are finitudes. You can have sequential finitudes, but not sequential infinitudes in any practical sense. Maybe ideationally you can have sequential infinitudes. Now, how did I get off on that? Well, anyway, we're looking at this map. And it is a marvelous map. Yes, let's see. The rays and the initiations. I have to find my way back to the map. Oh, here it is. Okay, I've got it. All right. So I've referred to it many, many times, but each unity on it, each singularity, not using that term the way the physicists use it now, is only one of seven. The ultimate singularity on the ultimate cosmic map will not be one of seven, simply because there's an arbitrary finitudinizing. In other words, rendering of the universe finite, simply because it is in sequence. So there have to be limits with any emerging universe. But at least on this map, every hyparxis or peak of a hierarchy is only one of seven, and on it goes. So this is not an all-inclusive map by any means. It simply deals with the aspects of divinity as we understand them within a limited context of a local cosmic parabrahm. Now, how many starry systems does a local cosmic parabrahm contain? We don't know. Maybe we're really quite fortunate if we can isolate our local cosmos to the Pleiadian cluster and what surrounds it in terms of our local constellations. But it's a very local perception. Our local cosmos is this little triangle, and there are 49 other cosmoses, or at least groupings of constellations, which are like ours, only have perhaps different constellations in them. So a sub-pararamonic logos, see, there's so many constellations within a little triangle here, but only seven of them are major. Just the way there are only seven major planets, but many 115 planets. So, you know, if we were to take the same kind of factor, 7 into 115 is 1, and is 45, 7, 42, about 16, 17 times. Of course, that's not really legitimate to do, but, you know, it gives us some idea. There might be 16 times or 17 times more non-sacred constellations in a one about whom not may be said, as there are sacred constellations. So we'd have to add up all of the sacred constellations and the non-sacred constellations to find out roughly how many constellations there are in a sub-parabrahmanic logos. And then these sub-parabrahmanic logoi are also the sacred ones. So are there 16 or 17 times more of these big circles in a cosmic parabrahm? So we're really talking about a tremendous number of stars. But when you compare it to the number of stars in the arm of a galaxy or the number of stars in a galaxy itself, you know, hundreds of billions, and some galaxies having trillions of stars, is still a relatively relatively small number from what I can understand. I mean, you know, even, let's just say, for argument's sake, that we had, well, maybe we should use the number 10 since it's easy to handle. Suppose we had 10 sacred units in this, and somehow 200 other units of a constellational kind. So let's just say we had something like 200 in each one of these triangles. 200 times, let's say, another 10 would be 2,000. We'd have, like, for instance, 2,000 constellations in a sub-parabrahmanic logos. 2,000 times another 10 would be 20,000. So maybe we'd have 20,000 constellations. And let's say the average stars in constellation, let's say it's 10. So then we have 200,000 stars in a cosmic parabrahm. In other words, we've got, let's just say we've got 200, we've got, how many constellations would be in here, I would say? Let's say it's 10 times 20. 10 times 20 is 200. 200 different constellations. So in all of these, multiplied by 10, you've got about 2,000 of those constellations in each one, sacred and non-sacred. And if we add, and if we multiply by 10 again, we've got 20,000 sacred and non-sacred constellations. Is that, no, maybe I'm making a mistake there. 2,000 in these, multiplied by another, what? Okay, calculator. 2,000 constellations in one of these, multiplied by another, what? 20 times 10 by another 200? Equals 400,000 30,000 constellations. And each constellation having 10, what, 4 million? So, but we're talking about billions of stars in a galaxy. So how many constellations really are there in a cosmic parabrahm? See, even in our local one about whom not may be said, there are, let's just say there's 10 major constellations, and, you know, just using a figure, 20 times more than that. So just like 200 constellations, let's say, in a local one about whom not may be said. And, you know, some of those can be quite obscure. We also have to deal with constellations that are in incarnation and out of incarnation. It is mind-boggling. But the point is the hierarchical structure. That's what we're really looking at. How the many resolve into one, and the one are again part of the many, which resolve into one, and on it goes. Well, some astronomer will have a good laugh at what I've just tried to do. But remember, we're trying to consider all of this from the esoteric occult perspective of beings in relationship to each other. And we're looking at a sevenfold structure of cosmos and ascending related septenates. That's what we're trying to look at. And of course, that kind of numerical structure is not laid upon our cosmos by the contemporary astrophysicists and thinkers, great thinkers really, but working more along the strictly fifth ray line and not thinking of the divine pattern. The second ray is the ray of the divine pattern, and we're thinking in those terms. So, however great the object towards which we strive, it is only one of seven. And then those seven will be absorbed into another one, which is one of seven, and on it will go until finally, after 10 dimensions are exhausted, and how would that be done? We have a seven which is surmounted by a subjective three, and which brings in a final one, which is the universal logos itself, which is one of a sequence of finitudes that has been in process forever. Maybe I better leave this subject while the going is good. I just, you know, I probably would pull my hair if I listened to what I've been saying for the last 48 minutes here or so. At least the two maps do not exactly superimpose upon each other, but they have their necessary similarities and point to beings the scope of which are totally unfathomable to us. If in a little triangle here is a one about whom naught may be said, and really naught can be said, then what's to be said of all these other parallel beings, and of the being that includes them all, and of the being that includes comparable ones? Nothing can be said. All we can see is there is a tendency to move towards ever greater inclusive holes, and that movement is occurring on a somewhat sevenfold basis, at least where the major parts of any whole are found. They're also within any whole a lot more than seven, and they too are absorbed, but we're just concentrating on the seven to keep it manageable. And of course, the seven may really be a ten. And so there may always be a subjective three in any seven. Well, you know, you just pause and you just think for a moment of the organizational structure of such a cosmos and of its dimensions, and you just, your mind just can come unraveled in the attempt to contemplate these things. I mean, you know, the mind just hits a wall. It just hits a barrier. I mean, and even the masters and greater beings, they're not going to bother with the further extremes of this kind of chart. I mean, we're told that there are things beyond the conception of our planetary logos. There are things way beyond the conception of our solar logos. He's just as a crystal compared to some lives, and that is probably a mathematically accurate comparison. He's just as a member of the mineral kingdom to some of the greater lives. And when does it end? Well, the human mind is not very good at conceiving infinitude. It can drive you quite mad. So it does conceive of endings and finitudes. Where does it end? Well, we're told there are 10 dimensions in cosmos. We're told that. How do we measure these dimensions? I assume they have to do with planar structure and the constituents of planes and the frequency, vibratory frequency of the constituents of planes. That is how I think planar structure is organized. But we don't even know whether the higher cosmic planes have constituents. We have atoms, subatomic particles. We have the tiniest particle that occultism allows us to talk about. We have the bubble in the koilon, as it is called. But is that bubble a composite structure? And if it has constituents, and there's another bubble in the koilon for the cosmic astral plane, is that a composite too? What is the final, ultimate particle event in all cosmos? The mind allows us to think in these directions, but it doesn't allow us, as presently constituted, to solve what we think about. And nor is there a need for us to solve it. If you think about it, we can imagine the vast system in which we live and all the necessary intricacy of its constitution. And we can think about what the ultimate God has in mind by putting things together in this way. But the principle is enough, that all the complexity is purposeful, that an unimaginable glory lies at the consummation of the universal process. I mean, Master DK tells us, I think just in relation to our local system, that the morning stars sing together. And there's a great paean, a great song, a great hymn, which emerges in the consummation, a glorious choir, with every constituent being a part of that choir. And that's just local, so one can only imagine the ultimate universal choir and the great climax of any universal process. It's enough to know we're on our way in some great and wonderful, beyond imagination, system of interrelated beings in which the expression of glory is the greatest bliss possible, and that every unit will be glorified within the ultimate glory. It's enough to know that such a future lies ahead in time and space, which maybe don't exist as we understand them, that the great consummation is coming, and it has ever been the nature of sequential universes to end in a great consummation, and we're all part of that great musical composition with its final chords. And everything we do to attune to each other and to relate to each other properly and to refine and to ascend is better to play our role in this cosmic, universal consummation achieved by various steps. And, you know, we will have our part in various consummations on the way to the ultimate consummation. It's enough to know that we're participating in that glorious process, which is totally self-justifying. You know, we don't have to have a reason for this. It is its own reward. And that what we do counts in terms of reaching that intended consummation. That we, you know, in a way, we cannot escape from the greatest glory that is, which is just the merest emission of light compared to the ultimate being who lives eternally in the highest possible consummation, infinitized consummation. It is that. So whatever we have in terms of universal consummation is the, you know, as great as it seems relatively, is next to nothing compared with that which the Absolute is forever. Well, you know, when you look at a chart that says cosmic or Parabrahm, you begin to think in larger terms. You really do begin to realize that the human mind has very, very definite limits. And that these limits are staggeringly confining compared to what's out there and what's in there. We think it's our whole world, you know. But our whole world is just the tiniest particle. We say just as dust, but even dust is pretty big. The tiniest particle compared to the scope of the universe in which we are finding our expression. So the big and the small, you know, one develops a different perspective on these things. And a map like this, made 114 years ago in the Theosophist, suggests the great structure. And the great structure, we're not going to master that right now, but we're going to be filled with the sense of awe and wonder and the sense of its beauty and the sense of the inevitability of consummation. And that's going to change our life attitude in how we live in these extremely dense strata of ignorance in which we habitually express and find our lives circumscribed. Our attitude will change because we're part of something ultimately wonderful. As wonderful as it could possibly be, infinitely wonderful, beyond all conception, wonderful. And of course, any word is a slight upon it. So maybe, you know, if we can inspire each other, if we become inspired and we can inspire each other with the sense of the magnificent enterprise in which we are engaged, then we will live differently right here on these very lower levels where we must live according to our own self-created intention. And we'll do a better job of it. And on our own lower levels, we will experience the joy possible on these levels. The impossibility of any real pessimism because of the inevitable consummation, which lies on the impending level and all manner of successive levels until the final level of consummation, which has been endlessly repeated forever. Well, I might get back to the text, don't you think? Pretty soon. So, that was a little bit of a trip. For those who have the patience of the stomach to stay with it. But just, you know, allow your consciousness to expand toward the great possibilities and the true scope of man, whom DK calls microscopic man. It's not usually that we think in such large terms, and maybe nobody finds it practical, but if it reduces all that we see before us into a more proper perspective, we can handle what we see before us in a better way. So that would be the goal. All right. So we will get back to the text now, following this theosophical map, which has been included, and I will just say that ad infinitum. It says the subdivisions must be imagined as going on ad infinitum. I think my mind is that of a finitist looking for infinity, but I would not say that it is correct to say ad infinitum. Not if there are 10 and not limitless dimensions in cosmos. The only place where there are the limitless potential of dimensions are included in the ultimate infinitescence, which is the absolute. So, oh no. Right. So then, this will have to be the end of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 14A. Page, same page we were on. Didn't leave it. Page 1231. With that map that has always intrigued me, but now I see more into it and what its limitations may be, and then this will be the beginning of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 14B, page 1231. So sometime we'll get a class together, you know, and people will be able to discuss in different ways what they think of these maps. These will be in the new schools, which will emerge. And in a time of greater peace, when the contact with the higher worlds will not be so disturbed, and we will be able to bring the hierarchy to Earth in terms of its great illumination and into the consciousness of humanity. But for now, we'll leave this map. We may return to it. It is quite a useful one.